Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Josh Harris is going to hold his season-ending press conference at 11:30. We're going to carry that live here on the Team 980. What do you want to hear from the owner? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I'll tell you what I want to hear from him here in a moment. But there was some news over the weekend related to the team. Washington blocked assistant quarterbacks coach David Blau from interviewing for the Jets quarterback coach position. So he is staying here for at least another season. Now, by rule, and this came into play in 2020, they can't block him from interviewing for an offensive coordinator position. You can't block assistant coaches from making a significant move up, a non-lateral move. Even though he's the assistant quarterbacks coach right now under Tavita Pritchard, who is interviewing and interviewed last week for the OC position in Jacksonville, you can prevent him from interviewing for a quarterbacks coach, even though he's the assistant. You can't prevent him from interviewing for an OC or a head coaching job. And some of you were interested in what the rule was on that. So was I. I went and looked it up last night, and that's essentially the rule. You can block any of your assistants from interviewing for anything that sort of represents something close to lateral, but you can't prevent them if they're not an OC already or a head coach already from interviewing for a coordinator position on either side of the ball or a head coaching position if they're not one. David Blau's an assistant quarterbacks coach, and he was going to be interviewed by the Jets for their quarterbacks coach position. Washington blocked that. We've been talking about David Blau since the moment he was hired back in February. It was a year ago, basically February 15th, 16th, something like that, 2024. This guy is considered to be the next big thing in offensive coaching. You know, a lot of people going back a year ago said, this is the dude. They love him. Everybody loves him. They think he's brilliant. He works so well with people. He works so well. Quarterbacks in particular. He was a quarterback. He was a career backup in the NFL for a few years. But this guy apparently is incredibly bright and had a great relationship with Tavita Pritchard, with Cliff Kingsbury, and of course, Jaden Daniels. And they want him for another year before he probably has an opportunity to go get an OC job. Now, if Tavita Pritchard were to get hired as an OC somewhere, Jacksonville is an example, then Blau would become the quarterback's coach. And you got him in the building for another year. So Cliff Kingsbury remains. David Blau remains. We'll see about Tavita Pritchard. But a lot of consistency. You know, they lost assistant special teams coach John Glenn over the weekend, but Larry Izzo's still here. But the fact that you've got all three coordinators, special teams, defense, and offense, coming back, and some key lower-level assistants are staying as well. Continuity, man, something this team and this franchise hasn't had for a long time. And, of course, continuity at head coach and at quarterback will be really nice. So David Blau blocked from interviewing for a step up from assistant quarterbacks coach to quarterbacks coach with the Jets, but the team is able to block him from that interview process. They really like him and maybe see him as their future offensive coordinator if Kingsbury, let's just say this time next year, gets a head coaching job. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What do you want to hear Josh Harris say when he takes the podium in about 23 minutes from now for his year-ending press conference? I love how we don't hear from Josh in the middle of the season. You know, he's not holding Jerry press conferences after games. He's not tweeting anything. He's an adult. And he understands that it is incumbent upon him to give kind of a state of the franchise before the season begins and sort of a recap of the season that was when the season ends. Perfect. Two times a year from Josh Harris, unless, of course, there are other big events, which there will be. I mean, he's hired a team president, but more importantly, we will have the stadium news. So here's what I'd like to hear from Josh Harris today. This is what I would like to hear. First of all, great season. Really appreciate and congratulate Adam and his staff, Dan Quinn and his staff, the players. Thank you. Incredible job. But I promise you that they will all be working hard, and I will be there to provide them with whatever they need as an owner to get to the point where this press conference next year is a week or two later. By the way, I don't want promises of results, just a commitment to not being satisfied that an NFC Championship game appearance was the end-all, be-all. No promises. One of the things they've done a really good job of since taking over is under-promising and over-delivering. In the first season of this new ownership group, and I consider this the first season, they did not have time to put their fingerprints on the 2023 season. It was too late by the time they got the team. And as we read last week, they didn't even know they were going to get it until they finally got it, until that money was finally wired. It was a very, you know, touch-and-go thing at the end. But it was too late. You know, training camp was starting a few days later. Can't, you know, fire the coach and the coaching staff and the front office and hire people in late July. We knew that last year was not really the first year of on-the-field Josh Harris ownership. This year was not a bad first legitimate season. NFC Championship overperformed by miles and didn't promise anything other than a relentless work ethic and a head coach who promised you're going to see a team that plays physically and plays with a top-notch motor throughout. Number two, after sort of a congratulations and a but, we're not satisfied yet, and we will be working hard to get to the next level. Number two, I'd love to hear him say, we got a deal with the city to return to the RFK site. The deal still needs to pass the city council, but we've done our part, and the mayor and her team have done their part, and we are proceeding with essentially waiting on a city council to vote on a deal. Now, do I think we'll get that today? No. I think we'll get an update on that, I would hope. But I would think that when they do have an actual deal done, it'll be a joint press conference. It'll be a joint press release, but more likely a joint press conference with the mayor and with Josh Harris. And then number three, and I don't think we're going to get this, but wouldn't it be great if he said, we've heard you, and we're not taking this lightly, and we haven't taken it lightly. We're going to change the name of the team to the Washington Football Team. And then he lays out the process. Now, we're not going to get that. But what I would like to hear at the very least, and I don't know if it's appropriate because I do think that they have been waiting for that stadium path to clear, you know, of politicians, and there are 13 of them on the city council. But at the very least, what I'd like to hear, and I've talked about this for a while now, we've heard you. We understand that this is an issue to many fans present and past, and that is something that we are treating and will treat with great respect and with a lot of seriousness. We don't make decisions impulsively. We will look at everything. As of now, the update is everything's on the table. You know, no promises, but everything's on the table, including name, branding, things like uniforms, etc. I think the stadium stuff needs to clear before we get anything definitive, but who knows? And like I've said for a long time now, you know, despite what got presented as something I said last week, which I didn't, this is not easy. This, and some of you get annoyed when I say this because you think I'm bailing on this. I'm not bailing on this. This is what I want too. But there's no easy fix. There's no obvious solution. The obvious solution isn't available. It's not. Redskins is not coming back. That ship sailed in 2020. And because of that, that would obviously be the most wildly popular answer for our fan base, past and present. There's not an easy solution. That's number one. I respect that this isn't easy. Been talking about this now for a year and a half, longer than that. Not an easy solution. Really hard for them. I think they'd love to do something with it, but it's not easy to come up with the solution that will please everybody because no solution will please everybody. You know, it comes down to, is doing something better than not doing something? My opinion is that it is, but we don't know. They've got all the information. They understand what the economics look like right now with what they just had and trying to extrapolate it to year two. Look, they didn't sell out every home game. They did not have great local television ratings with one of the most exciting teams in the league this past season with the most exciting rookie quarterback we've seen in the league in a long, long time. But maybe their data and their belief says it takes time for it to reach the masses. And that time comes next year. And like I've said before, it's also really possible that for me and people of my age or people of my mindset when it comes to this, they're not as concerned about us. Because we don't provide the lifetime revenue opportunity that somebody much younger provides. It's a lot of moving pieces to this. I absolutely believe that they understand that this is an issue with many, many fans. But the solution, who knows? I don't think we're going to hear that they're changing the team name today. Like I've said for 8 months now, I do think they would like to do something and will do something. We'll see with the uniforms. I do feel more strongly about that being something that is more likely than the name change. You know, I'd put the name change still, you know, slight favorite as it's been for year and a half, minus 130, minus 135, whereas the uniform's probably closer to like minus 180, minus 200, something like that. Odds maker on name and branding right here. All right, your calls, and then Josh Harris. What would you like to hear from him? We'll get to your calls next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Josh Harris is going to address the media in about 10 minutes. We will carry it here live. By the way, some breaking NFL news. Myles Garrett has officially requested a trade from the Cleveland Browns. So there's a topic perhaps for next hour. But what would you like to hear Josh Harris say today more than anything else? Let's start with our guy Samaj. Samaj, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Kev, for taking my call. And Mr. Basin behind the booth, appreciate you guys as always. Coach, man, it is just so crazy how you and I are so like-minded. That's why I listen to you all the time when I can. I was so happy to get you back on Odyssey, dude. I mean, all I can say is, for the most part, I'll echo all three of your points. Like, and in the illogical ascension of how we expect things to happen from a business priority standpoint, location first, then name. I mean, I have nothing else to. All that was perfectly in sync, as you usually are, dude. However, I will add this caveat. I think the solution to the name, I'm not going to say it's simple, but I will say I think it will address most of Berg and Gold Nation's concerns as far as the name and the brand going forward, and somewhat easy in that it's already had its presence at some point in the timeline of Berg and Gold. And that is simply, just take it back to the original name. It was the Boston Braves when they moved them down to D.C. Just go back to the Braves. And in doing so, we bring back what I think is the most important thing to the Berg and Gold Nation. That's the logo. Mm-hmm. I think if you bring back Braves, you can bring back the logo. And I just hope Mr. Harris is quick to say, as you put it in, yes, we've addressed the location. Good. Let's move on to the name. And I hope it can happen in that type of season. I'm like I told you before, jokingly, if we have another winning season, I think we're stuck with the C name. I just think that's inevitable.
Well, I mean, it may have already cinched it. We'll see.
You're correct. Yeah.
Thanks, Samaj, as always. I think the most important thing is that, and I think this will happen, is that it's taken very seriously and it's explored. And look, they have all the data. They understand also the logistics involved and what would be involved, the cost involved in doing it, which they did it in short order in 2020. It was not cheap to change from Redskins to Washington Football Team in just about a month and a half. So there's just a lot there that I think anybody that has ever dealt with, you know, kind of, you know, financial decisions, cost benefit analysis understands. I've always felt, and I've not been afraid to express this, that it's something I'd want, but it's also something I believe it'd be better to figure out how to do something about it than not do something about it. But I don't have all the information. Let's go to our guy, Ross. Ross in Tampa. Ross, what do you want to hear from the owner? Go ahead.
I want to know what he thought of that stadium layout that was circulating the internet last week. That was such a beautiful layout. I know it's not the final thing. It's just a proposal. But I would love if somebody asked, hey, Mr. Harris, I was wondering if you saw that video that came out. What do you think of that? And is that something that aligns with your vision? Now, Kevin, I had a question for you last week. I was stuck in my freaking mailroom, so I didn't have no signal. But, you know, we grow up as a fan of our favorite teams, and we don't know who our owner is right away. I had no clue who Dan Snyder was until I was 16 years old. And I wanted to ask you something, Kevin. I wanted to know if you remember this, and if you did, who was it? So it was the Sean Taylor 5-interception game against the Packers. He had picked off Brett Favre all those times.
Well, he didn't pick him off 5 times. He could have picked him off 5 times, but he ended up with
he had a lot of them.
Yeah, it wasn't 5. He had a lot of them in his hands. It could have been 5. But in that game, I think he only had 2 but could have had 5. I'll look it up. But go ahead. What do you want to ask about that game?
Yeah, my grandfather was a huge fan of all like the pregame, postgame content, and we were listening. And there was a guy who basically – this was my introduction to Dan Snyder. He said, as long as he owns his team, Washington fans, you can forget about ever winning a Super Bowl. And that was the first time I ever heard somebody slam the owner. And it shocked me. But I wanted to know, Kevin, if you remember anything like that happening, who said that or
I know exactly who said that. It was my very good friend and my co-host at the time on the post-game show, Joe Jacoby said it during the post-game.
Wow.
He said, as long as Dan Snyder owns the team, they'll never, ever win anything of note. And that was in 2007. And he was reprimanded for it by Joe Gibbs. By the way, it was 2 interceptions he had in that game against Green Bay. But you're right, he could have had 5. Let's go to Ian. Ian, go ahead. What do you want to hear from the owner?
I want to hear how aggressive he'll be in spending, what the payroll philosophy will be in terms of offense versus defense, what he views as the window of opportunity with Jaden on the rookie contract, and how he will be aggressive in terms of payroll moving forward. And obviously, I'm in the opposite opinion of you. I hope he comes out and says, based on the success of this year, the jersey sales of Jaden Daniels, the success of the team, we're keeping the team name and moving on. And if they want to.
By the way, on your first point, I know how you feel on the second point. I don't want to hear him get into specific football specifics. I want to hear him say whatever Adam and his team and whatever Dan and his team need to win, I will be there to provide for it. I don't want to hear him talk about, you know, salary cap breakdown and how much to offense and how much to defense. I don't want to hear that. That's something you get from Jerry Jones, right?
No, I know what you mean. Of course, I agree with you that you don't want an owner meddling in personnel like that, but rather like a holistic approach of here's what our payroll will be, given that he controls the purse strings. So that's what I would kind of alluding to.
I just, you know, whatever they need, I am here to provide it. That's my job as an owner. Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, what do you want to hear Josh Harris say in about 3 minutes?
I want Josh Harris to say we are going to approach this offseason like we were 6-11. Okay? The honeymoon is over. We are going to approach this season, this offseason, like we were 6-11, because we could have easily been 6-11. If we come back with the same roster that we had this year, next year, we may be 6-11. I want him to say that because there's been a honeymoon period, which we should have, because everyone is happy. But the reality of the situation is a whole heck of a lot of things went right, fell right for Washington this year, including not many major injuries and a lot of things on the field that helped Washington. So I want him to say, we're going to remain aggressive. We understand that we have holes in the roster. I know you don't want him to talk like Jerry Jones, but as a fan, I would like the owner to realize that looking at this totally objectively, at least for the regular season, we dodged several bullets and we could have easily been 6-11. That 4-game losing winning streak at
Gary,
the end could have easily been a 4-game losing streak.
I know where you're going with this, and I in sort of conceptually, I kind of agree with you, but they're never going to be 6-11 as long as the quarterback plays 17 games. You realize that, right? The 6-11 days, as long as he's the starting quarterback, upright and healthy for 17 games, those days are gone. Thanks for the call.
I disagree with you.
All right. Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, he's got to stay upright and healthy. But the reason they won all those close games is they had an elite quarterback in his first year doing it. Imagine what it'll look like moving forward as he grows, although that's frightening to think about. All right, Josh Harris's live press conference next. All right, let's go out to Ashburn, where Josh Harris is about to meet with the media with his season-ending press conference.
Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. Really excited to be here. Before we talk football, I just want to acknowledge the terrible tragedies that have occurred here in the D.C. area and then obviously in Philly and the loss of life. And my heart and the hearts of all of us here at the Commanders go out to the souls that were lost and their families. And then I just want to say thank you to the first responders who are helping really deal with the situation. So just take a moment. Now let's talk football. You know, and by the way, Bobby, good to see you. Doug, thank you for being here. I'm honored. So first of all, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I wish we were in New Orleans. But that aside, I mean, obviously I couldn't be prouder of the team, the players, the fans, the coaching staff, front office. And so I just want to say thank you to Adam Peters and his staff for what you did, Coach Quinn and Dan, your staff. And then obviously it's a testament to your leadership, the culture that we built and where we ended up. NFC Championship game, first time since 1991. And obviously acknowledge the players, Bobby, but also all the players, you know, just showed up. It was a new situation, and you guys killed it. And so just mentioning the captain, Zach, Terry, Jeremy, Bobby, and obviously Jaden and what he did. And lastly, I wanted to say on behalf of our ownership group, you know, thank you, DMV. We couldn't have done it without you. You showed up. And thank you to our community of fans. I mean, I couldn't believe when I was out, I went to every game and I'd see Commanders fans and faithful everywhere I went. And it just grew and grew and grew. And I can't tell you how much it means to all of us here, the team, to feel supported when they go to war, when we go to war, knowing that the fans are on our corner, it means a lot to us. So with that, future is bright, and I'll open it up to questions.
Josh, over here, John Keim, ESPN. So may as well get this one out of the way first. It's become a topic again, but what plans, if any, do you have about with rebranding, whether it's name, jersey, and how does winning impact how you view that situation?
Yeah, so just to hit the name first, like we're focused on, we're back to saying, you know, what we said all last year, which is focused on winning football games, on getting prepared for next year, on fixing up Ashburn and the stadium. We could talk about that. And then on engaging with the community of Washington. And so right now, and now in this building, the name Commanders means something. It means that, you know, it's about players who, you know, are love football, are great at football, hit hard, mentally tough, great teammates. And so it's really meaningful that that name is growing in meaning. And so, but as far as rebranding and bringing our past, you know, which obviously I grew up with, and all the Super Bowl championships and our future together, you're going to see us head back towards, you know, honoring our past and bringing it together with our future.
And how does winning impact, how does this season and the winning impact how you, how aggressive you may want to see the organization be when it comes to free agency and other moves this offseason?
Look, we're looking for Commanders. And whether it be free agency, trades, draft, and obviously we have a lot of cap flexibility. We have a full slate of draft picks. You know, certainly we're going to be talking to other teams where we can find players that, you know, are great at what they do and fit our culture and are great teammates and are situationally aware and hit hard and are tough. Like, we're going to get them to come. And so, you know, we're totally focused on improving our team from last year, and I think we're going to do that.
Josh, Ben Standing with The Athletic. To the point of improving on the team, you guys, obviously, with Jaden, it looks like you may have found a really good young quarterback going forward. That also comes with the opportunity with him on a rookie contract for the next couple of years. How do you kind of assess that opportunity, and do you think that leads to being more aggressive in free agency this year?
Yeah, we have a massive opportunity, and you know, we're not, none of us are taking that lightly. We're all fully committed to continuing to build our team and be elite over the long term, right? And so, and obviously that you know, that we understand that contract and those dynamics. And so, like I said, where we can find players that fit us and that we think are going to bring it, we're going to go after them. And so, you know, I don't know how that translates to aggressiveness in free agency, where Adam and Dan are hard at work and they're going to advise me on that. But certainly, you know, we're going to do everything we can to improve our team.
And obviously, the way the season unfolded, getting all the way to the NFC Championship game, you've said, hey, this is pretty obviously great, but also a bit surprising. You can tell us now, what were your realistic expectations going into this last year about what you guys thought you would actually do?
You know, look, I knew we were going to go to – no, I'd say I predicted. No, look, obviously the season came out amazing and better than anyone expected, and no one could have sat where we were all sitting at the beginning of the season, where we had entirely, you know, for the most part, a new coaching staff, a new front office. More than half the players were changed. But, like, obviously, you know, credit to Adam and Dan and their staffs for bringing everyone together, and credit to the players for making it happen on the field. And so, you know, look, you know, we got it. Like, we've arrived, and that changes expectations. And, you know, I've lived through this before, and we welcome it. And you know, we're just going to work harder and to create a situation where next year we win.
Josh, David Aldridge with The Athletic. In terms of a new facility, new stadium, I should say.
Yep.
What's your vision? What is it that you want in terms of, do you want just a really great stadium, or do you see it as an opportunity to kind of really transform a neighborhood and have more bells and whistles in terms of restaurants, housing, all of those things that some other teams have tried to do?
Yeah, so I have three or four things in mind. I mean, obviously for me personally, you know, I grew up with a great stadium, and I understand, you know, what it's like to play in a stadium that, you know, where it's hard for the visiting team to play, right? I mean, we've experienced different stadiums. You know, like I said, I've been to every game for the last 2 years, and I see differences. And so, you know, the primary objective is to create a stadium that we're going to win in, because I think if we do that, and so there's all kinds of decisions that go into that. But I also think that we have a responsibility. You know, when a city, you know, takes land and utilizes it, you know, for a stadium, right? They're taking it away from other things they could do. And so it's our responsibility to make it, you know, an amazing economic development opportunity for where it is and create a lot of jobs and, you know, help that area, right? And so all the areas, as I think everyone knows, we're considering multiple jurisdictions. But in each case, right, those areas need need help, need improvement. And so that's got to be part of it. And you know, the cities themselves have to have, you know, their own input as to what they want. These are political processes, right? And they matter to the neighborhoods and to the greater areas. So we're, you know, right now in the middle of all that. And so, yeah, I think it's both. But for me personally, I start with, like, we need to have a great place where our fans can show up and feel like, and as much as possible, we want that to be an advantage to our team in terms of winning on the field.
Do you does the success this season speed up a potential timeline? I know you got to go through jurisdictions, cities, city councils, state governments, so there's a certain friction there that you have to navigate that you can't do anything about. But do you think that you've gained a year or more in terms of timeline by the success of the season?
Yeah, look, any time that you win on the field, I mean, we all now experience what it was like here, right? And it was the reawakening of Washington football here in the DMV and everywhere, right? Because there's lots of people who grew up with the team that I grew up with. And so anytime that you get that reawakening, right, the population at large is supportive, right? And so there's no question that there's some momentum and, you know, we would hope to capitalize on it. But, I mean, obviously, we're in, you know, dialogue with, you know, jurisdictions, with Washington, with Maryland. And, you know, really, they're a big – what they want to do is a big part of it also. And so and every indication is that everyone is supportive. And so we're just going to try to move it forward as fast as possible.
Hey, Josh. Sam Fortier with the Washington Post.
Hello.
In November, at a Bloomberg event with David Rubenstein, you said that D.C. would be the most politically viable because it would be the most accepted by all jurisdictions. I'm wondering if you still feel that way and if you could explain your thinking there.
Yeah, look, I think that obviously the DMV, right, is three jurisdictions, and it turns out D.C. is in the middle. Plus, it's the location maybe, but plus because of the history. It's location that when we do surveys is the most acceptable. But there's a lot of things that go into this, and we play in Maryland right now. We have an amazing relationship with Maryland. And like I said, it's not just our decision. Like, the decision is about the specific regions and areas and states themselves and D.C. itself. So, like, we have a lot of dialogue going with everyone, and we're going to keep pushing forward. That I continue to, kind of just be transparent about what the surveys say and how the area feels at large. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of support in Maryland, a lot of support in Virginia. There is. But obviously, D.C. is, kind of aligned with the history and happens to be the easiest place to get to for the most number of fans.
I was going to ask you, how does that thinking, how does, you know, the studies kind of inform your multi-jurisdiction discussions that you're going to have over the next weeks and months?
Yeah, look, these are very, you know, complicated things to decide, right? So you have zoning, you have real estate, you have what you can build, what you're allowed to build, and site planning. And so certainly it's an important part of the mix, but it's not the only factor.
Josh Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post. This is a public-private partnership you're talking about with the stadium. Do you expect to pay for the actual building yourself and get government to help with land and, you know, infrastructure, or do you expect to get public money for the building too?
Yeah, look, obviously we're having a lot of discussions right now, and it would be, I don't think it would be appropriate for me to get in front of, you know, the governments that we're talking to, the Maryland government, D.C. government, PG County. I mean, I think it just wouldn't be appropriate. But I appreciate the question.
You're listening to Josh Harris live in Ashburn with his season-ending press conference.
And just kind of a minutia thing, Dan Quinn at the end of the season talked a little bit about your kind of week-to-week input with Adam and him going through the process. He mentioned Friday calls. You wherever you were around the world, you were always available. And what do you get out of that? What was the process like, and what sort of what's the advantage for you to having such?
Yeah, I'm just learning, to be honest with you, from people who've been kind of good at this for a long time. And you know, obviously, very happy with what we've got here, but ultimately, right, to a large extent, I have professionals running the team, running the front office, and so I'm somewhat deferring to them. But obviously, ultimately, right, I have to make sure that I understand, you know, what's going on enough that if there was something that I disagree with, I would, you know, involve myself. But right now, very happy with the leadership I have in place.
Josh, Steve Weiner from the Associated Press. Following up on John's question earlier, is it safe to say the commander's name is around just to stay? Is that safe to say from your standpoint?
Yes. And we're actually, I think it's now being embraced by our team, by our culture, by our coaching staff. And so, we're going with that.
And I'm curious, how did your experience kind of dealing with the city of Philadelphia and Comcast and all that with the arena kind of affect your stadium thoughts here? And obviously, you're dealing with three jurisdictions here, maybe two there. How did that sort of affect or maybe help you prepare for this?
Anytime you go, like our North Star, it really is the same approach, which is ultimately like, what's the best, you know, like I said, there's a lot of factors, but what's the best thing to do for the underlying population, and in the case of Philly, we ended up in an amazing situation where we're developing an arena, you know, in the sports complex in Philly for the Sixers. We're developing the Center City in Philly. We have Comcast as a partner. We're getting hockey and basketball. So I think that we ended up with an amazing situation and for Philly, right? And you know, obviously it's a little more complicated here because it's multi-jurisdictional, but we're keeping our eye on the same thing and trying to balance everything and do what we think is the best thing for the city, for the overall region and the fans and the team. And that's how we're going to think about it. But it was a good education.
Hey, Josh. Eric Flack from WUSA 9. Emails from the city show that you personally called Chuck Schumer trying to get the RFK bill passed, and that you personally called with Jason Wright, Wes Moore, to try and get Maryland to back off. How do you look at somebody from Maryland and say you're seriously still considering Maryland when you seem to be so laser focused, including that picture in the Oval Office, on a DC option?
I would say that Maryland's been Governor Moore and his team have been amazing. And, actually what we were trying to do is get D.C. to the table. So, like, I want to make sure that we're clearing up this misconception. D.C. was not at the table because they didn't own the land. They didn't have control of the land. So what we wanted to do and what we accomplished doing was to allow for the federal government to transfer control of the land to D.C., right? Now, D.C. has to decide what it wants to do. It's got a lot of flexibility to do whatever it wants with the land. And Governor Moore was incredible in terms of saying, we went to Governor Moore and we said, look, you know, we just want D.C. at the table. And he said, look, I'm on board for that, but I want to make sure that if that's a direction that D.C. wants to go and you want to go, that you take care of Maryland also. And, of course, we were going to do that anyway. And so I think that there's no negative – there's no – nothing has been decided, and we're going down both paths at once. And so – and that was the whole conversation. So all that happened so far – and, yeah, I was working pretty hard to get D.C. to the table because I thought it was the right thing to do. And now we got the hard work of figuring out – the multitude of specifics that you need to figure out when you're doing something like this. And D.C. really has to decide what it wants to do.
Days after the RFK land became official in D.C. hands, you made in your ownership group up with the Sixers made a pretty surprising about face and reached a 50-50 partnership with Comcast on an alternative arena agreement there, as opposed to you financing a downtown arena. Are those two things separate, or can you see them as intertwined? And if you're saving money in Philly, does that mean there's more money for a Commander Stadium here?
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, first of all, they're not intertwined at all. They're totally separate situations. And obviously, you know, we're going to we have the ability to finance both the arena and the stadium. They're totally separate situations. And so, and listen, ultimately, deals, you know, about face. I mean, deals kind of come. Ultimately, if you keep your eye on what's the best thing for the city, negotiations don't happen in a smooth way. And then you got to be able to pivot and willing to pivot. And when you think it's the right thing to do. And so it ended up, we ended up in a great place in Philly. And I'm hoping we end up in a great place. And I'm very, very confident we'll end up in a great place here.
Mr. Harris, Mark Seagraves, NBC Washington. And I understand why you don't want to get ahead of the conversation on the proposals coming from Maryland and D.C., but from your point of view, D.C. has several different stadiums with several different models, business models. Do you see a stadium in D.C., a business model that you prefer? Do you prefer to own the stadium yourself? Would you want to play in a stadium that is owned by the jurisdiction?
Yeah, again, I appreciate all these questions, and I'm going to go back to my same answer, which is that really it would be D.C. and Maryland are deciding what they want, right? And then we're going to react to that and be, you know, let those conversations play out in confidence. And all I can tell you is that we're really hard at work right now trying to move the process forward with everyone and try to figure out, again, an amazing place where opposing teams fear to come and our fans love to come and our players love to come, and then do that in the context of, you know, really improving the area where we're building and creating a lot of jobs and economic development. So that's what we're going to do. But I can't really get into the specifics. It's you know, the cities have to, you know, dictate, you know, when and how we talk about some of those details. And then obviously I'm happy to be available and react to them, but like that's really the appropriate way for me to move forward on all this.
Do you have a timeline on when you would like to have proposals in hand and make a decision and break ground? Can you update us on that timeline for you?
Yeah, I think we've talked about being done in 2030 as being a base case. We're going to sort of stick with that and not get into, you know, kind of like, you know, the specifics of the timeline. Because, again, we're reacting to a political process. And, you know, look, you should listen to the jurisdictions themselves. They've given some hint as to what they're, what they think. And, you know, they're, you know, I'm listening to them like you are and reacting. And we'll keep up. And so I'm going to let them, you know, drive the conversation on timing and process and financial details, because that's the way I think it should be.
My last key.
Three more questions.
Can you just, what do you say to taxpayers about justifying why taxpayers should in any way fund, regardless of the jurisdiction, building a stadium for a professional team?
Yeah, again, I think that by and large, anything we do will create massive economic opportunity for that area, from thousands of jobs to, you know, a ton of economic opportunity moving forward, construction to jobs, and a lot of development opportunity around it. And so that'll all be in the mix, right? And I understand that question, right? And I've been through this. And the cities are going to make that case, and then we're going to stay behind the cities and allow them to make the case they want to make. And but certainly, that will all be. It's going to have to make sense for the, you know, the people living there, right? And the communities themselves, of course, no question.
Hey, Jess, Scott Abraham, ABC 7. Obviously, this time last year, you officially announced that Dan Quinn was going to be your head coach. So quite the 12 months for you. What are you most proud of over these 12 months?
What I'm most proud of, I mean, obviously, there's a lot, honestly, that I'm proud of. But first of all, the leadership. I think I made the right leadership choices. And, you know, Mark Klaus now in the building and the business. We're going to be a lead on the business side. But I really feel like, you know, I, as I said to you then, my most important three jobs were picking a coach, picking a GM, and then picking someone to lead the business. And I feel great about where we are and the leadership we have in place. Secondly, I feel super proud, obviously, of how excited and happy the Washington community is to and the reawakening of Washington football. And that's everything from like how we played on the field and, you know, what we did on the field. And really, I mean, obviously we won four games last year. And to be going to the NFC Championship, how can you not be proud of that? I mean, I'm very proud of that and very appreciative of the players and everyone who was involved in that. But also, like, listen, I mean, I wandered around. I made it a point of meeting a lot of fans in the stadium, outside of the stadium. And people are super happy here. And, you know, like, people were literally crying in bars and, you know, grown men, you know, grown women. And it's really... it's really helped the happiness and the excitement. And, you know, there's very few things in the DMV that unites the whole DMV. And the Washington Commanders is, like, front of the list. And so that's probably the thing I feel most proud about, that people here are appreciative of Washington football again, like I felt when I was growing up. And so let's keep it going.
Time for one more.
Clearly, there's a lot of talk with the new stadium, but what about a training facility? Are you committed to keeping it here in Ashburn? Obviously, you invested in a brand new grass field. What are your thoughts on maybe building a new training facility in a different jurisdiction, or do you have plans just to stay here in Ashburn?
Yeah, so first of all, we're going to do a lot of things in the offseason to make players' lives better, to make coaches' lives better, to make front office lives better, and obviously, whether it's the wet area, the weight room, our indoor facility, you're going to see a lot of changes here, and you're going to see a lot of changes in the stadium. We're going to continue to build on, you know, the $75 million we had earmarked. So that'll be north of 100. You know, we got a whole bunch of plans to help the premium areas to continue to build infrastructure and to continue to make the upper deck better. I mean, a lot of stuff. And so, but here, you know, really, you know, we're going to focus right now on the stadium itself. And, you know, this, and I think the players like to be here. Coaches like to be here. That's not to say that we won't revisit it over time, but we're focused on fixing this place up right now. We're certainly, you know, going to look at that. But like right now, the big project is the stadium, and you know, and so right now we're going to spend a lot of money trying to make this place better for the people that work, live, and play here.
All right, thanks, Josh.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, everyone.
Here you go, bye-bye. Josh Harris, the owner of the Washington Commanders. Lots on the name, a lot more on the stadium during that, but we will follow up on all of it right after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.